On this episode of China Unscripted, the information war about the coronavirus, crazy problems with coronavirus tests, and should the world look to Taiwan? Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Kanista.
And today we're drinking some tea from our sponsor, Path of Cha. It's called Bai Lin Gong Fu White Forest Black Tea. So, I mean, how's this? You guys actually get to see this happening. This is for real.
We should have set this up better so you could demonstrate your tea pouring Gong Fu.
I know. I actually kind of violated protocol by pouring for myself first. But, yeah. I mean, I used to be a professional tea pourer once upon a time. There you go.
All right. Thank you.
A little more for you, Shelley. Boy, isn't this exciting for our first really, like, filmed podcast?
No, we did the BBC Dad?
Yeah. BBC Dad. That was a fun one. Hey, guys, cheers.
I don't think you're supposed to do that.
Hey, East meets West. And cheers to you guys. Thanks for watching from... hopefully you're social distancing.
Unlike us.
3 feet is what we can achieve here.
Oh, man, this is actually really nice tea. I use this. It's almost sweet, I think.
It smells nice.
Have you had some, Shelley? Why haven't you had some? Tell me.
Because I was trying not to slurp it.
So I think we're going to talk a little bit about the sort of propaganda aspect of the coronavirus. We haven't really talked about that much on the podcast. Yeah, Shelley?
You know what I like about doing a video version on YouTube for this is that you can see Shelley's subtle expressions of like sarcasm or like when we say something stupid.
There's nothing subtle about it.
I'll just like do a gym stare into the camera the entire time that you guys are talking.
But hey, speaking of being on camera, how about Matt's quarantine goatee that's coming in?
Well, I was trying to grow a full beard, but it's kind of patchy, so it's going to end up being more of a...
That's okay.
A goatee, yeah.
That's fine.
I mean,
the 90s are coming back.
Yeah, no, the thing about goatees, you know, is that I kind of, if I have a goatee, I end up looking like my own evil twin, you know, like from Star Trek.
Yeah.
But I just can't grow quite the full beard
as you,
Chris. I'm
trying to figure out what would a more evil version of you be like with that.
Impossible.
Exactly.
I don't know. Chris already has experience with being the evil twin beard version of himself. How's that going for you?
Yeah, about the same, really. So, coronavirus, guys, let's get serious. People watch us for how serious we are.
That's very true.
So, Shelley, I think you sent out a very interesting article by ProPublica. They basically, since August 2019, were tracking more than 10,000 suspended fake Twitter accounts that were basically propaganda channels for the CCP, like criticizing the Hong Kong protests and now talking about the coronavirus.
I mean, they were basically talking about how this disinformation campaign is going on in Chinese language Twitter, mm-hmm. predominantly. But everything from hacked Twitter accounts being bought or possibly hacked and slowly taken over by these people who are then like just spouting stuff about the Hong Kong protest and then stuff about the coronavirus and then also a separate campaign to buy off prominent Chinese Twitter users. Like, Ba Diaocao got an offer to tweet, you know, positive stuff about China's handling of the coronavirus and they would pay him a certain amount of money.
They were barking up the wrong tree at that. How come they haven't reached out to me? I'd do it.
I don't think you tweet enough in Chinese. Is the problem.
Well, kai sure. How do you say tweet in Chinese?
I believe it's tweet.
Oh, well, there you go. But I think one of the examples that ProPublica gave was actually of a college student in America whose account got taken over and started spewing out pro-China propaganda, began deleting all of her old friends, the old posts. It's like a virus.
Oh, I see. That's where you're going with it. Well, in some cases, the accounts were hacked accounts, but it's not clear whether these accounts that were eventually taken over by these Chinese Twitter bots or whatever, if they had hacked the accounts or if somebody else had hacked the accounts and sold the hacked accounts to them. Either is possible.
I mean, China is kind of known for hacking stuff.
True. what was interesting is that, you know, there is kind of the idea that China might be starting to use more Russian-style disinformation campaigns, kind of like the Russian troll farm things, or just more, instead of having the top-down message, which is usual China's propaganda, is like it, the message comes from the top and then everybody repeats it, is kind of trying to use these, like, roundabout ways to get people to believe that the coronavirus originated from the U.S. military, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I know they've also been trying to pay off, like, prominent, well, not prominent, that's giving them a lot of credit, but YouTubers to also start sprouting the whatever propaganda of the day it is.
Yeah, I mean, report positive stories about China.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, an interesting thing about the whole paying off Twitter users thing is that, remember when we were talking about the 50 Cent Army and how they used to pay people 50 mm-hmm. cents to, you know, leave a comment, a positive comment, propaganda comment on Chinese, like, social media, and then we stopped seeing that so much because they would just have hire companies that just did this.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see them kind of go back to their roots and approach individual people to try to get them to be propaganda influencers.
It's nice because, you know, the economy in America is really struggling because of how badly the trade war affected the United States, because China was winning that, and, you know, the coronavirus economic hit. So it's nice that China is helping the American economy by paying these, you know, YouTubers to.
Wait, so how much?
Those are people in China.
How much are they paying? How much would they pay?
Yeah, but
in America,
white YouTubers in China.
Uh huh.
So they're not. That's not helping the American economy.
Really? They're not going to send it back to their poor families starving in the United States? By the way, guys, I'm making bank.
How much would they pay, say, you know, a white person in New York to do this?
I don't know that they've really expanded their Twitter operation.
About $1.25. I hear.
What, per tweet?
Yeah.
That could be very lucrative.
Yeah. I mean, so I hear.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you've noticed a change in the tweets coming from China Uncensored, don't worry. I mean everything. But yeah, you really see the Chinese Communist Party. It's actually quite impressive how they're trying to spin the coronavirus in their favor, considering what a disaster it should be for them. Since this is like people watching from their, hopefully, quarantines, they have the Chinese Communist Party to thank for this.
I have to say that never have I felt so strongly that we are in an information war.
Yeah.
With the CCP. Like, it's just so fascinating in this sick and horrifying way to watch them try to change reality, really.
Yeah. Who knows where it started? There's no proof of it. Hey, isn't an American cyclist the one who first had the coronavirus? Oh, no, it was the U.S. military that spread it to Wuhan.
I'm pretty sure the cyclist was in the military.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
So it's the same.
An
it's
American
the same
military
theory.
Cyclist.
But, like, just, you know, the whole, like, oh, well, we are, it's not our fault. Like, don't criticize us. You know, it's bad to do travel bans. We should all be working together to solve the problem.
Travel bans. I love it. Travel bans are bad. Hey, WHO, repeat that. The travel bans are bad. And now what's China doing? Travel bans.
And their travel ban is, like, even more blanket than
American. Yeah, all foreigners. All foreigners. I saw today somebody posted a sign of, like in China, like a restaurant or something that put a sign that said, "We will be denying service to all of our foreign friends." Like, imagine that in the United States. No foreigners.
Yeah, that's...
Which is ironic because... China would be the first one getting state media to pump out articles about how racist the United States is.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're complaining about is the hypocrisy. I mean, also just the idea, the restaurant thing is stupid because who knows how many, it does not based on how soon you came into the, how recently you came into the country. It's just based on whether you're a foreigner or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether China wants to close their borders, I think by itself would not be so controversial if it wasn't for the hypocrisy of them complaining about mm-hmm. it and trying to put diplomatic pressure on their allies that did issue travel bans. Like, they really came down hard on Pakistan for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, Italy did not have travel bans for a long time because close ties to China.
You know, if you're the first European country to sign on to the Belt and Road. You got to preserve that relationship.
Buyer's remorse?
Well, I think, I don't know. This is where the information war part comes in, because it's horrifying to see how now, when a lot of countries are kind of absorbed in, you know, dealing with the coronavirus crisis domestically.
Not absorbed, infected.
Now that the coronavirus outbreak in China seems to be slowing down.
According to official statistics.
I mean, I think the official numbers are definitely wrong and we should never trust them. But the general trend seems to be true, where they think it's at least not as much of a crisis as it was before, that they're willing to risk opening the economy back up. But so they've it's slowed down a bit in China. We don't know the real numbers, but it's slowed down enough for them to now turn their propaganda mechanism toward making themselves look good to other countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the whole thing where now they're like, we are saving you.
Yeah, the whole thing about the state-run media articles kind of making it seem like China is donating loads of medical supplies to like 82 countries, when the reality is they're actually making them buy it.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with selling medical supplies.
Sure.
No, that's not the problem. The problem is then you write this article about providing medical supplies and making it seem like donations. And there's a lot of shady stuff going on with these medical supplies.
Yeah, wasn't in the Czech Republic that like 80% of the test kits didn't work?
I'm not sure exactly what happened with the Czech Republic one, but I know that in Spain...
Maybe you should check it out. Cheers.
There is another interesting story that's coming out of the Czech Republic, which is the fact that the Czech Republic had seized medical supplies that were supposed to be going from China to Italy last week, and then it was like a scandal, like, why are they seizing the medical supplies? It turns out that they were being held in a warehouse owned by a Chinese businessman who has ties to the United Front.
Mm-hmm.
And these medical supplies had something to do with the Chinese Red Cross, which is a very corrupt organization. Everybody in China knows.
Not tied to the Red Cross that Americans
know. Yeah, not tied to the International Red Cross. It's actually part of the Chinese government. But like, so there's all this shady stuff going on with this warehouse of seized supplies. And the interesting thing is that a lot of these United Front groups, not just in the Czech Republic or Europe, also Italy, there's been documentation of this in Canada, I'm sure in other places, where these United Front groups, like 2 months ago when the coronavirus was bad in China, they were buying up medical supplies in these countries and shipping them back to China.
Wow.
As like a patriotic demonstration, you know, which is, again, you can't really fault people for doing that exactly, but now some of these United Front groups are selling back or donating back like a smaller amount of these medical equipments. And then also you have a thing where these United Front groups are kind of, I don't know, like it's being used as this face mask diplomacy thing, like part of the whole, like they're being donated. And in some cases, they're only being donated to overseas Chinese in those areas.
That's right.
Yeah, like the case in Italy, right, where it was like these face masks are for overseas Chinese in Italy.
And again, imagine if like any other country were to do something like that.
Yeah, but like because it's all kind of in Chinese language media and it's all kind of skating under the surface, but they can use it for their PR and their soft power. So I feel like we haven't seen yet whether they're going to come out of this looking bad, which they should.
Well, I was going to ask,
good, you know?
Do you guys think this propaganda warfare is working? Like, is China, is the Communist Party going to be able to spin this that like they're the good guys and not the ones that are responsible?
No, it's not going to work, and I'll tell you why. Because China Uncensored has more than 1 million subscribers, and we are letting people know the real situation.
Well, on that note, I do feel incredibly validated for after like 8 years of being like, everyone, listen, China is important. It's affecting your lives. What? No, that's ridiculous. How could China affect our lives? It's on the other side of the world. Well, guess who was right?
All it took was a global pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's more that I feel that we've been preparing for 8 years to cover this, Like, we spent 8 years trying to understand fundamentally how the Chinese Communist Party operates and the nature of the Communist Party and the mechanisms they use to do things and their propaganda warfare. And so all of that now, I feel like it's really easy to look at what is coming out of China and being able to analyze that. Whereas, you know, I see a lot of Western media, you know, a lot of times you know, I know how it works at you know, a newspaper or a TV network, and they throw a journalist on a China story or a coronavirus story, and they're not necessarily that steeped in that level of information.
Steeped?
Like RT. No, I get it. But
Path of Cha. Visit go.pathofcha.com/unscripted.
But
I forgot that earlier.
I've been like an on-the-ground reporter, and typically what happens is the assignment editor will say, go cover this story, and then you have, you know,
two hours to research it. To become an expert on
right.
this topic.
And so like in a lot of cases, reporters, and especially on television, because they typically don't have beats on television, reporters do stories as if the reporter is an expert on it, but the reality is they're not. And oftentimes what they've done is they've spent a few hours reading how other mainstream media have covered something. And if those media are wrong, like if the New York Times gets it wrong, or
they get the story from China.
Yeah. So then like the reporters just don't know. And they say, okay, well, I'll take the New York Times version and the Wall Street Journal, and I'll look at China Daily, and I'll try to get a balanced perspective. And
or they're just using, you know, the official numbers from China, because right. the Chinese government, that's the numbers.
Like that BBC article that said, oh, you know, now more people have died from the coronavirus in Italy than in China. And the idiocy of that logic is mind-boggling, because it implies that, like, the Chinese Communist Party is as reliable when it comes to data as the Italian government. And that's just not a good comparison.
Well, even today, I believe the New York Times came out with a front page that said, now America has the most cases in the world. And, like, that's... So you're trusting China's numbers, you're trusting Iran's numbers. It's astounding that they would just
take it based on that. U.S., there have been stories about how, like, we may not have the right numbers exactly, because hospitals on the front line might be reporting bigger numbers, and it's just taking some time for that information to trickle up.
There's also the lack of availability of test kits, which, you know, you wrote that really great America Uncovered about that recently, which...
If you're curious about what's happening with coronavirus testing in America, please check out our America and Sense, America Uncovered episode about it. But I think the interesting thing is you brought up the Czech test kits from China that mm-hmm. were faulty. I'm not sure exactly what the case was that, but...
Matt! I'm sorry, he's got a drinking problem.
I was so eager to drink the tea
you breathed it in.
I breathed it in, but it's a very nice aroma.
Are you okay?
I feel great. So please continue.
It's tea, not coronavirus, right?
It's just the tea. Don't okay. went down the wrong pipe.
We are now also breathing in Matt's aerosolized tea particles.
Yeah, it's very fragrant.
Yeah. So the test kits from the Czech Republic, yeah, some of them are faulty. There are also test kits that Spain bought from a company in China, mm-hmm. And these were not the test kits that we talked about in the American Covered episode were PCR assay tests, which are looking for the genes in the RNA of the virus. So that's the most accurate type of test that we have. It's just that it takes longer and it's more complicated. Now they're trying to come out with like antibody tests where you just take blood from a person and then you just check to see if they have the antibodies to fight the coronavirus, which would indicate that they have the virus if their body is producing antibodies.
Now, I'm concerned about that because I think that's just a conspiracy by the secret cabal of vampires who secretly run the government.
I was like, where is this going? Okay.
Go on, Shelley.
Well,
hey, Matt got to interrupt you with his coughing. I got to interrupt you with...
This is what it's like all the time. Okay, anyway,
you're making a good point, but let me interrupt you with my stupid thing.
Anyway, the antibody tests that are blood tests, they're not as accurate. They have, like, I've seen anywhere from 20 to 30% false positive or false negative rate.
That much?
Because, wow. Because one problem with the false negative is you might not have had the virus long enough to have developed enough antibodies for them to show up in your blood, but you might still have the virus. And the false positives is because it's a less sensitive test than doing like the comparing actual genes on the virus, you might, the test might mistake another coronavirus. The antibodies for another coronavirus for the antibodies for this coronavirus. So that can't be used as a diagnostic test. Mm-hmm. You can use it to see if people have recovered kind of from the coronavirus or if they had it in the past. But no, everybody's like, you can't use that to diagnose. Spain bought like 64,000 or 640,000. The number is unclear from the reports of these tests from a company in China, these antibody tests. Mm-hmm. And then they found that instead of having like a 20 to 30% error rate, they only had a 20 or 30% success rate.
Wow.
So terrible. They couldn't use the test.
That is a solid F on any test. That reminds me of chemistry in high school.
So the problem, and then the...
I mean, my grade.
Then the Chinese government came out with a statement that this company that the Spanish government had bought the test from, this Chinese company was not certified to sell those tests in China. So it's not clear whether... I mean, it seems that they may not have gotten the certification.
Well, so I mean, if these blood tests are so terrible, what's the point of even using them unless there's a secret vampire cabal running everything?
Well, the point is that they could take only... you know, an hour to do, or you could do it at home more easily than the kind of assay tests that are the more accurate one. Or they could be more plentifully supplied easier because the ingredients aren't as hard to get, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think also we just, when you don't have enough tests, you don't have any idea how many people are sick in the population.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking with my brother last night, and you know my brother Josh, because he was actually on one of our early podcasts talking about the Chinese economy and Bitcoin, cryptocurrency. And he made a really interesting point because he's a data analysis guy. And he was saying because of the way that we're not testing enough people in the population, we don't have a good idea, A, of how many people have been infected. And that leads to not having any idea of what the mortality rate is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the difference for a virus having a mortality rate of 4% versus having a mortality rate of 0.4% is enormous, not just in terms of the death toll, but also in terms of what is the appropriate government response to that.
Do you shut down the economy or not?
Right. And so, you know, we're taking a multi-trillion dollar hit to our economy. The Federal Reserve has dropped interest rates to an absurdly low level. That's going to affect markets for a long time to come. And they're doing a massive quantitative easing, which is, in very simplistic terms, printing additional money to pay for some of this stuff. But we ultimately suffer from additional inflation to deal with that. So, you know, there's a huge response on our government's part. Is it an appropriate response? And I'm not saying it's not appropriate. I'm saying we don't know how appropriate. And my brother's point was that, you know, because we're not doing enough, like what we should be really doing is randomized testing of segments of the population to just know among random people who aren't, you know, themselves electing to have the test. We just want to know in a general group of 10,000 people, how many of them are infected. And then after 2 weeks, how many of them pass away. And then you'll have an idea of what the actual mortality rate is. And then by extension, what the risk is to the country. So right now it's kind of like we've seen the effect on Chinese hospitals in terms of beds being overwhelmed. So we know it's serious.
Also Italy.
Right? And Italy. We know how serious it is that it's overwhelming the healthcare system. And so regardless of having the data, you do need to flatten the curve and practice social distancing and washing your hands and so on. And everyone needs to do that. It's just that trying to sort of tweak the response to this coronavirus as well as future epidemics, like, you know, we really do need to get much better data, and our testing system is kind of a mess right now.
Well, there is that type of testing. It's called surveillance testing. And early on, the public health labs in certain areas, including New York, were told to do surveillance testing, which is the idea of like testing a certain number of people in the population and seeing how often the coronavirus shows up. The problem now is these public health labs are becoming overwhelmed with having to do other types of testing, like diagnostic testing for the coronavirus. So I'm not sure what the current state of the surveillance testing is. There was an interesting anecdote from a academic lab in Washington State who had just started on their own type kind of surveillance testing way back in January. They weren't licensed to do it or anything. They were just kind of doing it for their own research where they could get samples from people and just run it through their own PCR tests that they had established. And they found, they ran like 300 tests and found 12 people with the coronavirus. And then, interestingly, they couldn't legally tell the people that they had the coronavirus because they were not supposed to be conducting diagnostic testing. So they got around that by calling the healthcare providers for those people and being like, you should test this person for the coronavirus. Wow. So, yeah. So, but I think there is a certain amount of surveillance testing going. We just don't know what the results are.
Yeah, well, it's fine. It's fine.
We'll have some glitches.
Some glitches. It's fine.
No, everything must be perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
You must be having a hard time right now.
I've had a hard time dealing with you for many years.
Oh, no. The first and last filmed China scripted podcast.
So. Wow.
Can I just hide behind my mic if I just like slump low enough?
No, that's why we put you very far away from the camera. So they won't even be able to see you. It's okay.
There we go.
But yeah, I mean, the coronavirus has really exposed a lot of the faults in like American society. Like, you know, what you're saying about like how to test. Like, that makes a lot of sense, but what you see in reality is, like, you know, politicians are more concerned about blaming the other side of the aisle for mishandling things. You know, we see Chinese propaganda being very successful at dividing the country on racism, like whether or not calling it the Chinese virus is racist. And, like, that's pretty incredible that, like, we are all in this country, like whether you're Republican or Democrat, you know, liberal or conservative, we're all in a horrible situation because the Chinese Communist Party screwed up. And yet now they have us fighting each other instead of them. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, to be fair on the racism thing, mm-hmm. we didn't need a lot of help fighting each other about racism.
That's true.
I think it was a manipulation that the Chinese state-run media were able to do is kind of turning any criticism of the Chinese government's response into racism.
Mm-hmm.
And then by extension, the whole, like, we can't call it the Wuhan virus, the Chinese virus. And I understand some people have valid concerns about that. And there have been racist and xenophobic attacks or, you know, spitting on people or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not something that hasn't happened. But the idea that they can then use this and kind of make it into their geopolitical tool is what's like the diabolical evil genius part of it, I think.
Which is why I think Matt was pretty clever like a week or two ago when he came up with the idea that we should start calling it the CCP coronavirus, or CCP virus for short.
Yeah.
Because you can't call that racist.
It was funny because like the day that we published that, I think I'd written that script like 2 days prior. But the day we published, we started seeing like several other media start using similar terms.
Yes.
Washington Post.
Washington Post was a couple days later, but there was an...
Yeah, they're behind the curve from us, but... You know,
there was an opinion piece in the Hong Kong Free Press where they were like, we should call it the CCP coronavirus.
Oh, they must have watched our show.
And I think like Epic Times just calls it CCP virus now. So
yeah, that's right.
So it's just like a lot of people had... And then the Washington Post columnist Josh Rogan, who has been pretty clear-eyed on China in general, I would say, also said, you know, we should call it the CCP virus. So it's kind of a lot of people having this idea around the same time.
I mean, no, because everyone got it from us.
I agree with that statement of absolute fact.
Yeah.
I have actually seen that CCP virus, the image that we made floating around Twitter.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's infectious.
You know what we should do? Because people have asked for that. We could just... you know, give people a version of that they can use on stuff. You know, if people want to post it somewhere, we'll just, we'll put a link maybe below this video. You can download the image.
Oh, that's a good idea. I mean, I posted it on Twitter, but yeah, I guess not everyone's going to see that. So yeah, folks watching, start calling it the CCP virus, and we will include a link below where you can download a pretty cool graphic that says CCP virus. Should we make t-shirts about that, or is profiting off of pandemic in poor taste?
Well, it's more that, like, would you want to wear a t-shirt that says CCP virus on it?
That's very contextually unclear.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great conversation starter, which is a bad idea when you're supposed to be practicing social distancing. Just,
you know, when you're having your Zoom parties with your friends.
Oh, my God, Zoom.
Yes.
What Ian Easton posted.
Oh, yeah.
From finding Project 2049 Research Institute. Great guy. Check him out.
Finding out that Zoom has like a huge data center plus employees in China because they are doing what they call labor force arbitrage, aka paying engineers in China lower than they would have to pay engineers in the U.S., so therefore they are profitable.
So for clarity, you should be concerned about doing anything secure on Zoom.
Yeah, just having employees in China is not as big a deal as also having a data center
there.
Yeah,
data centers, that's the issue.
Right, because, like, according to Chinese law, any data center or company based in China has to turn over information to the Chinese government upon request. And they may call it a warrant or something, but there's no barriers to getting any kind of warrant. So they just basically have to turn it over.
I saw something on Twitter where, like, somebody who works in healthcare had said that they're not allowed to talk to patients on Zoom because Zoom won't follow HIPAA laws, which is...
Sorry, what was that word again?
HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A. It's the, like, it's the Healthcare Privacy Act that guarantees that your information, your healthcare information, remains confidential between you and your doctor or the hospital, like, that they can't release your healthcare information to the government or to whoever, right?
And Zoom will not keep it confidential?
They can't guarantee it.
Jeez.
So they're told to not use Zoom to talk to patients because they can't get – and I think part of the reason they can't guarantee it is if they do have data centers in China, then, of course, they can't guarantee what happens with that data.
Yeah. And, of course, all this talk of Zoom is reminding me of Xenon Girl from the 21st Century, that Disney Channel movie from, like, 20 years ago.
Sorry.
Zoom, zoom, zoom makes my heart go boom, 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 you know? You didn't watch the Disney Channel back then?
My parents wouldn't pay for cable.
And I just didn't watch it.
You didn't watch Xenon? That's a great, great movie. Great sci-fi.
Yeah.
Made you think.
Well, I mean, I guess comment below if you're a fan of Xenon.
Protozoa was the name of either the singer or the band.
Protozoa?
Yeah.
Well, that's very educational.
Yeah.
So Xenon is like the element, the atomic element.
No, Z, like X-E-N-O-N.
Like the
is
atomic,
that, is that
like the
atomic
element.
Okay, yeah, that's the girl.
Not that
I
educational.
I met her at Amoeba Records in Hollywood once. It was
Amoeba
great.
Records?
There's a theme going on here. You've never heard of Amoeba Records?
It was
a great record store in Hollywood. Yeah, I met Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. I was super excited. She might have been a little creeped out, but...
Oh.
Yeah. I know, Chris, you're very
Chris
proud of meeting.
Creepy?
You're very proud of meeting like famous people, like when you went to early screenings of The Room.
Yeah, I mean, me and Tommy Wiseau were tight. Greg Sestero, who was Mark in The Room, good guys.
When you greeted him, did you say?
I don't know where you're going.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, probably at some point. Or maybe I was smart enough to know that probably everyone who sees him does that, and so I did not. He's a super nice guy. Still, I was probably more excited to meet Xenon. Girl of the 21st Century doesn't sound that futuristic anymore.
Oh my gosh, I had a dream last night. This is true.
Oh, this podcast is going off a cliff.
Well, no, but like that.
I've
that
never
we...
wanted to be practicing social distancing more than I want to do right now.
All right, I'll keep it brief. We were in the future. It was you and me, Chris, and it was just after October 2015 when Back to the Future was set.
Uh-huh.
We were like looking at
So how... you were in the past?
Yes, but it was in the future of Back to the Future Part 2.
Okay.
And then like there was a lot of the like the people were dressing like that, like the weird costumes, and we were discussing with like the movie producers how they knew all the stuff that was going to happen in the future.
Psychics, obviously.
Yeah, like that was kind of a weird dream. But I'm going to stop there because I feel like we should be talking about China.
If I zoom out for a moment, I realize this podcast has talked about vampire cabals, Xenon Girl of the 21st Century, and dreams.
Two of those were your fault.
Oh, I'm the problem.
Self-realization.
Wow. And all on camera. Well, so, all right, to end that topic, I think if everyone listening really makes an effort to talk about the CCP virus and talk about it with their friends and family, and just if there's this groundswell of understanding and people share that CCP virus image we're going to post as a downloadable link below, then their propaganda will not work, at least in the United States and China.
I'm a little worried that, you know, just that one image is not going to do enough, because I think seeing them do this whole pivot around to we're donating medical supplies and, you know, all this stuff is pretty, it worries me that, like, because we're all involved in, like, figuring out our own problems right now, that, like, there's not the effort to pay attention to what type of propaganda the Chinese government is pumping out.
Yeah, people will forget how it all began and be worried about today's problem.
It just seems like three months ago seems like so long ago, right?
Yeah.
3 months ago, we were like, hey, should we go to Taiwan to cover the elections?
Yeah. I mean, it just...
And while we're there, there's some kind of pneumonia-like SARS thing going around. I wonder if that's going to be a big deal.
I remember being somewhat nervous about flying through the Taiwanese airport because I remember thinking there's got to be a lot of flights coming in from China here.
And hey, this is a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about next, Taiwan. So it just happened recently that, a bipartisan bill signed by Trump, what was it called?
The Taipei Act.
The Taipei Act.
It's an acronym for something, though. You know, the Taiwan Alliance.
Awesome.
And Peace Everywhere Education. Initiative.
Oh, my God, guys.
Look, it's an acronym, but go ahead, Chris.
Taiwan Allies International Protection and Enhancement Initiative.
Maybe we should let Shelley talk about what this is.
Well, we bought her time. Like, China bought the world time to deal with the coronavirus by infecting the world. But no, it's like, I mean, one, this is an example of bipartisan support. The point I've been making on the show for a while now is that China really brings the country together. So the bill, it basically is advocating for Taiwan's membership in all international organizations in which, you know, statehood is not a requirement. This is an issue with, like, the World Health Organization. Taiwan has been complaining for a long time that China got Taiwan shut out of the World Health Organization, which I don't know what the big deal is, because the World Health Organization has done a pretty bad job, so I don't know if...
Maybe we should do another World Health Organization headed by Taiwan.
Ooh.
Did you hear that China was, or a Chinese think tank associated with the government, was shopping around this idea of having another World Health Organization led by China?
Oh, my gosh.
Like a couple weeks ago.
The regular one is already led by China.
Yeah. No, I mean, I felt like this is such a blow for the World Health Organization. All the toadying they did... And still, it's not enough.
It's like Western companies going to China, like, oh, we'll do everything. We'll do whatever censorship we'll want. You know, we'll turn over our Falun Gong employees in China. Anything you want. And then, you know, they still get their intellectual property stolen, and then they get
run out.
And then you have knockoffs like Baidu. Or like remember 5 years ago that there was a story about Ninebot, which was they knocked off Segway. And then when Segway sued them, Ninebot used the profits they made from knocking off Segway to buy Segway. And now Segway is owned by the Chinese company that knocked it off.
That's right. I mean, it's really like bad. Like, the Chinese Communist Party is like a bad 80s movie villain where it's like, but I did everything you said. And then the bad guy kicks you off the building and is like, I lied. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Like, it's just it's like comic book cartoonish villainy.
But
yeah, it works.
That reminds me of the those media companies that had their American employees kicked out of China, right?
Oh, the Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal.
And them doing a joint letter in response to the Chinese government and just kind of being like, we think this is a bad idea in a time of crisis.
Please let us back in. We'll be good.
But, like, you know, that's not the way to deal with them.
Well, I liked your suggestion on your on the China Uncensored episode.
Whose suggestion was that?
It was Shelley's suggestion that then Chris said on the episode.
We all write the scripts. I get all the credit.
But
what was your suggestion?
The suggestion was that they should just start printing like front page news about all of China's human rights violation, just a story about organ harvesting every day on the front page of the New York Times until the Chinese government decides that it's probably better to let them back in the country where we can control them.
And then it'll be the Chinese, it'll be Xi Jinping saying, please come back to China. We'll be nice to you. Stop talking about the organ harvesting.
I mean,
that's not really a Xi Jinping voice. It's more like, please come back to China. We'll treat you so nicely.
Actually, that's not a bad Winnie the Pooh. That's not,
yeah. Winnie the Pooh is a tough one to do. That was pretty good. Yeah. Hmm.
Kudos, Matt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a solid idea, Shelley.
So, of course, they're never going to do that. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the kind of, like, weird, backhanded, like, you know, you have to be... you have to stand up to them or else they're just going to keep walking all over you.
Yeah, like if it's a bad 80s action movie with this kind of villain, you have to do what Arnold Schwarzenegger would do. When you're holding like the little sniveling guy like over a cliff and he says, you promised you'd kill me last. You say, I lied. And then you kill him. It's great.
What movie is that?
Commando.
Okay.
I think I counted once and I think like the death toll in that movie was like 280 some people.
Wow.
So I have a flashback to See You at the Party, Richter, from what's the one where they go to Mars?
Total Recall.
Total Recall, the original one.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, you guys definitely know way more 80s movies than I do, I feel.
Well, I mean, our parents did not stop us from watching
rated R 80s movies when we were five.
My parents were unable to stop us because Videodroid would rent VHS tapes to me and my brother that, you know, like even when we were not yet 13, they would allow us to get R-rated movies.
I'm having this memory of being like 4 years old and going with my best friend at the time. This is shortly after I came to the country. He was a guy, obviously. And then we would go to the video store. Maybe we were 4 or 5. And like he would just like longingly stare through the screen door at the Jaws VHS tape.
Oh yeah, how they had like a section that like the kids weren't allowed.
Yeah,
to
like he would just be like, I want the Jaws VHS. Aww. Like it's like the forbidden fruit of.
I have a lot of fond memories of the old like local VHS store where I grew up. The problem with the stores back then is like, you know, people didn't really know what anime was, so you would get like horrific animes put in like the children's section because it's like, oh, it's a cartoon.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. I don't know if I want to hear the story.
I won't go into it.
So, China.
We were talking about the Taipei Act.
Oh yeah, hey, it's great that Taiwan is getting the recognition that it like the China, well, China has launched complaints about how this is, you know, really, oh gosh, what's the language they use, exacerbating the,
I think they called it US U.S. hegemony, or hegemony, depending on your pronunciation of the word.
Both are acceptable, like divisive and divisive.
Yes. So, yeah, it's in the news because Trump recently signed it. So now the Taipei Act is a law. You know, I don't know that it's going to do a lot, but at least shows the U.S. government is standing behind Taiwan and wants to advocate for it. So
I'm just thinking how funny it is, like Trump and Tsai Ing-wen are like, their personalities are so opposite, and even their political views on most things are so totally opposite.
Trump's a dog person, Tsai is a cat person.
Exactly.
She also has rescue dogs.
That's right. Never mind.
I was gonna, well, so there is a way to reconcile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like amazingly, like they seem to be, without obviously seeming to have any actual conversation with each other in the last almost 4 years, they have seemed to, like, you know, work together to strengthen that relationship considerably. And I think that's props to both leaders because it takes, you know, two people who are not afraid of what the Chinese Communist Party is going to do to make that relationship work. Otherwise, it's impossible.
That's true. No kind of pussyfooting around the one China policy or right. this kind of stuff.
And I think Ma Ying-jeou, the previous president of Taiwan, you know, he was very intent on not displeasing the Chinese Communist Party. So no matter what the U.S. government would have wanted to do at the time, and I'm not clear they did, but even so, like, there was no way to strengthen that relationship because Taiwan was backing away from that.
And that's how a lot of U.S. politicians used to handle China, too. Like, you know, we can't anger them. We need to work with them. And, you know, at the end of the day, then China just, like, betrays you and then laughs as they push you into a volcano.
I mean, I have to say that one of the things that Taiwan is getting recognition for is how well that they've contained the coronavirus.
Are they getting recognition?
Now they are starting to.
That's, I mean, you know, that's great.
A few weeks after we did our video about it.
We're like, leading the way.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, they are getting some recognition, which is great. But also what's interesting about that whole issue is I was kind of kidding about like a Taiwan-led WHO. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we should be looking at what they've done. I mean, it's a little late in a lot of places to do the contact tracing that they've done and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the public health education campaigns, the, you know, the quarantines, the, like, not trusting the CCP.
I think
that's the biggest thing. I mean, if you look at Taiwan, you know, Taiwan is the country that did not go into the haunted house. Because they're like, no, I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, Italy and South Korea and Iran, they're like, hey, guys, let's go into this house.
Yeah.
We'll spend the night.
But, like, it's, I mean, it's kind of tragic, but I think that that's, like, the number one thing that countries should take away from this.
Because Taiwan was hit really bad by SARS, which was basically coronavirus 1.0.
But it's not just Hong Kong. I mean, not just Taiwan. Hong Kong got hit by SARS.
Yeah.
The Hong Kong government was crippled by the fact that they're subservient to the Chinese government. So the government response wasn't that good to the coronavirus. But Hong Kong people didn't trust the CCP. So they took it on themselves to do a lot of these prevention measures more successfully.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that one of the advantages that the people in Taiwan and Hong Kong have, which Americans don't, is just a much greater social consciousness about A, the threat of the Chinese Communist Party itself, and B, a social consciousness about you know, what it's like in a real pandemic and the measures that each individual needs to take responsibility for.
Yeah.
And like here in the US, you've got some people who are, you know, trying to be responsible and quarantining as much as possible. And even if they have to go to work, they're still trying to, like, enact their own personal safety measures. And then you've got, you know, people who are like,
holding Fort Lauderdale spring break,
holding Woo! Coronavirus parties in Kentucky.
Really?
Yeah. There was a group of young people who had a coronavirus party. Then somebody got coronavirus.
Hey, that's a success then, right?
A successful party. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, it's just kind of a mixed bag in a lot of other countries. But, I mean, like, when has the U.S. dealt with a real pandemic like this? The last pandemic 11 years ago, the H1N1, was just, it wasn't really that big of a deal by comparison.
Yeah, I mean, in different places, I didn't remember it at all, but a close friend of mine who was a teacher in Queens at the time, she remembered it hitting her school because she was teaching in Elmhurst, which is now one of the worst hit areas by the coronavirus in New York City. The Elmhurst Hospital is becoming completely overwhelmed. But she was teaching in Elmhurst, and she was like, yeah, like, a lot of my kids were out sick with the swine flu. It was a huge problem. I mean, because a lot of people in Elmhurst, it's a poorer area of Queens, you know, people living in close quarters, you know, a lot of these issues. So,
yeah. But, I mean, we haven't dealt with one that's got a high mortality rate for 100 years, and basically nobody alive today, with rare exceptions, remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
Or has that feeling of what the impact is and what you need to do.
No, I think a lot of, you know, Hong Kong and Taiwan definitely learned from SARS. I mean, other, like, Canada was actually hit pretty hard by SARS in Toronto.
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Where there is a large
Yeah, I think it
community.
Came from Hong Kong. Mm. Yeah, too. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of other countries, I think even when people were starting back in January to, like, realize that this was, like, a serious, like disease that was spreading among people, I think people were still thinking in SARS terms, in terms of like how much it was going to spread around the world. Because I remember looking for face masks in mid-January just out of curiosity, because I was like, I bet they're going to, and it was already hard to get them. They were already expensive, because I knew that people were already starting to buy them up and ship them back to Asia. But it didn't really occur to me at the time that like now...
Toilet paper would be gold.
Yeah, like that, you know, now that like American hospitals need surgical masks, that they can't get them.
Supply chains in China.
Yeah, I mean, that's been, I think that don't trust the Chinese Communist Party and don't have, you know, critical things manufactured outside your country, but especially in China. Now I think there's a thing where there will be a lot of Chinese companies trying to manufacture face masks and supply them and sell them around the world. But I wonder if it's going to be a situation like with those tests that we were talking about earlier, the antibody tests that turned out to be only 30% successful.
Oh, so like they say they're N95 masks that are, you know, can prevent the spread of the virus, but actually they don't really have that certification.
I mean, right now we're in a situation where like everybody's desperate for these supplies, so you might not do as much quality control as you would normally, right?
Yeah.
So it could be a real concern.
Right.
And I think this is going to be the long, hopefully this will be the long-term effect of this, is that, you know, there will be internationally much less trust in the Chinese Communist Party, and particularly in the United States. You'll see, especially for critical infrastructure, like you say, it gets made in the United States. Like even colleges and universities in the United States are talking about being less dependent on Chinese students. Like just more and more independence and autonomy.
Yeah, and I think that's not the same thing as xenophobia or, you know, like nationalism in the like fascist sense
You know, Communist Party is going to spin it like that. Mm-hmm. But the easy argument, or the easy like retort to that argument, that if you want to back away from the China market, you're racist, is that, oh, we're still willing to work with Taiwan. They're ethnically Chinese mostly. So
we're working with the province of China.
Well, there you go. That's the one. We're working with the province of China, the best province of China.
I mean, we'll see. I think, like, I hope that people learn this lesson. I feel like maybe government officials will. I think there are some government officials that are pretty clear-eyed on this. But then there's still, you know, people who are pushing for, like, oh, well, we have to work together with China to, like, beat this pandemic together. You see plenty of those, you know, articles, and just like more the same type of like China engagement types of argument.
The thing that has failed us for so many years.
Yeah, and so it's not going to go away. So, and with this propaganda push from the CCP that like we're supplying all these medical supplies that you need now, and we save the world, and like you can learn from how we, you know, stopped the coronavirus and all this stuff. Like, I'm concerned that people will forget.
Well, that's why people need to share China Uncensored with their friends and family. But I am out of tea, and our TV screen is really shorting out or something. So I think this might be a good time to wrap up the podcast and, you know, go back to an appropriate 6 feet of space between each of us. So thank you to everyone. Hey, I can look at you guys. Thanks for watching. I can say it. Thanks for watching. If you're watching it on YouTube, thanks for watching China Unscripted. Be sure to get some tea from Path of Cha. Today we drank Bailin White Forest Kung Fu Black Tea. You can support the show if you buy it from go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. So thanks again for joining us. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Canesta.
See you next time.